Monster Man, episode 296, Living Statue and Majin, or possibly Magen. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are continuing our journey through Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. At present, we're in the middle of the Conjurations chapter, and this is the chapter devoted to beings that are summoned from other planes or created magically. Before we take a look at some of these monsters, there's another little piece of news. One of the books that I contributed to now several years ago, Cthulhu Dark Ages from Chaosium, came out in PDF earlier this year, and it's now out in hardback. My copy has just arrived. So if you had been interested in playing Call of Cthulhu games set in the early Middle Ages, these ones are set in the kind of mid-late 10th century period, although obviously you could use these rules for really any time in the early medieval period. You can go ahead and check out Cthulhu Dark Ages. I contributed some small bits to it. It's mainly written by Chad Bowser and Andy Newton, but there's some other parts by me and Mike Mason. If that sounds interesting to you, then and you were waiting to get it in hardback, then it's out now, so you should go check it out. All right, let's get on with some monsters. First up, we have the Living Statue. The Living Statue kind of forces me to think a little bit about monster categorization, which is something that I'm both interested in and profoundly uninterested in. I like a book to have a sensible system of monster categorization, but I don't like having to think about it very much, and this book is forcing me to do that. So I have some thoughts both pro and con the Living Statue. Here's the deal. The Living Statue, yeah, it's a statue and it's living. I mean, it's not really living. It moves around and things, but it's not alive. It's an artificial construct. But it is not, you understand, a golem, which is different. Also, consider the Guardian Warrior and Horse. The Guardian Warrior is a statue which is brought to life, but it is not a living statue. Clear? Now, I give these categories a hard time. I think they essentially are an artifact of the way that this book specifically was assembled, and for that matter, the way that some of the monsters in Fiendfolio and Monster Manual 2 were, which is to say that they come from scenarios. So the Living Statues, for example, appear in the critically acclaimed B10 Night's Dark Terror. What happened was that at the time that these creatures were created, they were specific to the context of a particular scenario, and it wasn't a good idea to assume familiarity with a particular body of monsters on the part of the reader. For scenario purposes, you do want the monsters to be tailored specifically to what's going to be happening in that scenario, and you don't want to be told to go look it up in some big monster book. And it's much more atmospheric to have the living statues inside this castle or temple or whatever. I have played Night's Dark Terror, but really only the beginning parts of it. You don't want to be told that those are like golems, comma, lesser or whatever. That's less atmospheric, even though from a purely like taxonomic perspective, it makes more sense. So if we are arranging monsters conceptually, then it's frustrating that the living statue isn't some other form of golem, and it's frustrating that the guardian warrior and horse isn't some form of living statue. But if we're arranging monsters contextually, it makes a certain amount of sense. The living statue is the kind of thing that you're going to run into in a spooky old mansion, and the guardian warrior and horse is the kind of thing that you're going to encounter in the long-abandoned tomb of an ancient despot. This may result in duplication, but from a strictly, like, scenario planning perspective, that's not a very big problem. It offends people like me who care about elegance in the design of these sections, but doesn't actually matter. All right, so there are three types of living statue in the basic box set, and then there are four more here. These are the silver living statue, the rock stroke ooze living statue, the jade living statue, and the steel living statue. And they are all quite surreal monsters, which is something that I like about them. The silver statue is like a little statuette It's very small. It's not, you know, human-sized. It's something that might be on, like, a mantelpiece or, like, in a little niche. Maybe you have a saint or something like that. And it comes to life. It doesn't do very much damage, but, it's got that, like, horror of the everyday about it. I would say that quite a lot of these are sort of Doctor Who-like monsters. I consider to be a Doctor Who-like monster anything that could be conceivably played by, like, either an actor in a rubber suit, an actor in a bunch of grease paint, or a somewhat unconvincing special effect. And if we allow for some trick photography, I feel like the silver living statue falls within that category, as do the other ones. The rock slash ooze living statue can kind of like blorp through walls and shoots out oozes. It's kind of the goofy one. You got your jade living statue. The jade living statue is more magic resistant. And then finally you got the steel living statue. When you hit the steel living statue with an iron or steel weapon, it can absorb that weapon. So that's kind of neat. And it sort of goes against the image of a steel monster. So generally when we think of steel, we think of it being kind of impermeable. So having things blorp into a steel monster is kind of a weird idea, but it's neat. I get a sort of it's made of liquid metal kind of vibe off of this one. So yeah, like I said, collectively they're quite surreal. I think they work reasonably well. I definitely like the idea. My favorite is the silver living statue. I love the idea that they're, you know, you definitely suspect all these like stone statues of old knights in the statue niches, but you don't suspect the silver statuette on the end table. And in fact, if you're a Dungeons & Dragons character, putting the silver statuette in your satchel and taking it away is the kind of thing that you might do. And then, of course, you would have this little thing, like, creep out of your pouch while you were sleeping that night and decide to go through your pockets or knife you or whatever, right? It's a real kind of, like, Ash in the Windmill and Army of Darkness sort of situation. Next up, we have the... I'm going to call them the Magin. Or the Magin? I guess they are magically generated, right? Or they're the magic people. A people, a tribe, Gens. So, yeah, let's say for the sake of argument that they are... the Magin. You may call them differently. They are created by magic. Magical people. Artificial humanoids created by magic. They first appear in X2, Castle Amber, and my notes here say, where presumably they make some kind of sense. There are descriptions of creating them which suggest that they are very difficult to create, kind of out of proportion to their usefulness, I would have thought, with maybe one exception. They seem a little more like the rules for creating them seem a little more like an excuse for why PCs can't create them than an actual system for creating them. But, you know. As with the living statues, there are four kinds here. The Hypnos, Deimos, Caldron, and Galvan types of Magin. The Hypnos one is telepathic and can cast Charm Person. The Deimos one is your regular old one, right? The people. They are soldier versions who have no special powers. The Caldron one, you would sort of expect, I think, that the Caldron one would be hot, but it's actually a stretchy acid-secreting monster. And then finally, we have the Galvan type, which, you guessed it, are the ones with electricity powers. You know where the name Galvanism comes from? It's a modern word. Galvanism is named after Luigi Galvani, 1737 to 1798. He was the Italian physician who... I think he was a physician anyway. Anyway, he's the fellow who discovered that you can kind of like make bodies jerk and twitch by like running electrical currents through them, basically. So he's a part of the discovery that like nerve impulses are electrical. There's probably a lot more to him than I know about, but essentially his name was attached to various like phenomena related to electricity because of his scientific studies of electricity in the 18th century. So Galvan is a really weird name for an electric monster because it doesn't come from a word that means electricity. It's a word named after a modern scientist in our world who studied electricity. Now the question is, do most people know that? But I'm not like a student of the history of science and I knew it. I don't know. It almost rankled me with Galvatron as well. Like, I didn't get what that was supposed to be about. He's not even particularly electric. He's not any more electric than Megatron is. Anyway... The name of the Galvan aside, these guys are fine. You know, I get the idea of kind of like a core of artificial beings that serve the bad guys, each with their own special powers. I think the Hypnos are very powerful. They almost would serve as kind of like officers or linchpins of the wider conspiracy. Although, of course, you just have to take them out and then you'd be able to deal with the pawns of the conspiracy, I suppose. Still, it's a lot. But yeah, overall, I think they're okay. You know, maybe there's more context to them in the scenario. but I think they are like minions of a powerful family of wizards, which I suppose makes sense. You know, sooner or later you just get bored like hiring servants from the village and you decide to create your own immortal race of artificial humanoids. And even if that immortal humanoid is just a regular dude with no particular powers, that's still a pretty impressive achievement. I get that. It also allows you to meet them and think that they're normal before discovering that they are in fact human-seeming monsters, which is also cool. So overall, I like the Magian, and I would probably use them. Again, between the living statues and the Magian, we've definitely got a kind of like weird magic castle vibe going on here, you know? And definitely more the kind of one that you're like going in undercover and trying to find out where the blue jewel is hidden, rather than the one that you're kind of trying to fight your way through. The idea of like the servants all having sort of concealed powers and the statues coming to life and watching you, that definitely feels like a sneakier sort of castle exploring adventure. Alright, that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to be continuing our journey through the Conjurations chapter. We're going to take a look at the Nightmare and the Reflector, right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.